You're listening to the Capital Press Room, and we're turning our attention to the childcare industry in New York, including efforts to address the cost of care, as well as the industry's workforce. To do that, we're checking in with Senate Children and Families Committee Chair Jabari Brisport, a Brooklyn Democrat who held a hearing in January on the childcare crisis. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
So to kick off your hearing, you made the case that the childcare industry is, quote-unquote, on the verge of collapse. Can you describe the state of the industry right now in the Empire State?
The childcare industry right now is collapsing, and it's accelerating. There are parts of the state that have lost upwards of 80 to 90% of their slots in the past decade, and this is really just going off of, and even in the past year, what advocates said would happen. The experts in the field said the investments that were needed to stop the bleeding in the sector, and due to the governor negotiating against childcare funding in last year's budget, we are seeing more capacity lost and longer wait lists for parents.
And what about the other side of the equation? You mentioned the lack of providers as more and more find this economically not feasible. What about, say, the state of subsidies for parents? Is the state making any inroads in help in that area? Or does the fact that there are so many providers who are shutting their doors make that whole issue of available subsidies kind of a moot point if there's no one to actually watch your kids?
Well, it's a little bit of both. You know, due to the fact that our subsidies are not 100%, that we don't fully subsidize to begin removing means testing, that adds additional burdens that make it harder for parents to access. But, you know, again, even, you know, there are parents, you know, you might get your voucher or you may, you know, qualify for subsidies, but you cannot find a provider, or you find one and their wait list is 2 or 3 years long. It is an absolutely unsustainable situation.
In the last couple of years, almost exclusively through federal dollars, New York has made major investments in child care providers, including in the workforce area. What difference, if any, has that had on the state of the workforce and the number of providers offering care? For instance, has it stopped this trend of providers closing their doors?
What we've done is substitute long-term sustainable workforce funding for one-time emergency stabilization grants or infusions of cash, which cannot guarantee security for workers. And they continually do keep leaving the industry to go to other places that can pay them more, even if they're not as fulfilling. I've had center directors or providers tell me they are losing workers to Burger King or to telemarketing just because they can pay 18, 19 bucks an hour and their workers are getting minimum wage.
Yeah, during your hearing, you had Dorothy Hill from the Schuyler Center for Analysis and Advocacy testifying, and she described the situation as workers making near poverty level wages, right?
You're completely right. You know, that's the poverty wages. We actually had providers come out all the way from Buffalo to talk about how they are even making sub-minimum wages. You know, we had a person who was leading the center, paying her staff the, you know, the statutorily required minimum wage, which was too low for them. But then because the subsidy rates were so low to her center that, you know, after paying her staff, she paid herself less than minimum wage.
So then what's the answer to this? I assume it's some sort of long-term sustained investments?
Yes, we need dedicated funding in order to raise wages, ultimately to reach parity with public school teachers, because childcare workers are teachers, childcare is education, and education starts at birth.
So you made that comparison to education when talking about childcare. Can you expand on what we should actually expect from our childcare providers? Because my experience was that I got 3 cookies and was sort of sent along my way after school.
So that was exactly why we did the childcare tour back in fall of 2021, was to clarify for our fellow legislators and the public that this is, it's much more than traditional babysitting. you know, you develop around 80% of your brain by the time you turn 3 years old. And, you know, the most critical investment in, you know, your learning, whether that's social emotional learning and just the basics of motor functions and the beginnings of verbal, you know, a lot of that comes from what you're exposed to in those first 3 years of life. And when we did the childcare tour, what we saw were that these childcare centers were essentially schools, whether they were in a center or whether they were in just somebody's home with a family-based provider. These were schools. They were doing lesson plans. They were teaching them. They had high amounts of structure, and it was education.
Is that level of care uniformly needed? Because I have to imagine if someone has, say, very engaged and active parents, and maybe they're promoting reading with their kids when they are with them after work, they've got the energy for something like that, they might not necessarily need the most hands-on and aggressive care. So is it the case that we need a system that you're describing for all of New York's kids? Could we have different tiers, say, of childcare-type services if we do want to rein in costs to some degree?
I mean, there's no such thing as too much quality education, you know, and the thing about education is repetition is good. So I would say, you know, even if they have well resources at home, having a high quality childcare provider is essential. And that is an investment that's worth making. And we do it for our public schools, right? You know, we don't disinvest from public schools in rich neighborhoods and say the parents can figure it out on their own terms. We just make sure that all the public schools have a uniform, high quality of standard of education.
Well, for listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Senate Children and Families Committee Chair Jabari Brisport, a Brooklyn Democrat. So, Senator, when you think about the investment that's actually needed to realize this vision, what are we talking about here? I know the number that I've heard in the past is $5 billion annually. Is that still what we're talking about, or has inflation kicked this number up another billion or two?
We're still talking about a minimum of $5 billion, which, again, is the number that we were fighting for last year that the governor negotiated way down. And you know, helped exacerbate the collapse of the childcare industry. But that's key to, one, not only paying all current workers in the childcare sector a living wage that's at parity with public school teachers, but also encouraging and helping new providers join the workforce and new providers open up their doors to create new spots and expand eligibility for more parents.
Do you have a preference on where that money comes from in the state budget? Would you like to see some existing funding cut, or would you prefer to increase things on the revenue side?
We absolutely have to increase revenue. This is the most unequal state with just a soaring number of billionaires who are not paying the rest of working class New Yorkers what they owe us, frankly, to make this a functioning society. And, you know, there's a lot of revenue proposals on the table that the governor has ignored in her initial proposal, in addition to the corporate tax, which she brought but kept the sunset on. We should eliminate the sunset, hike up the rates. I carry, we call it the heirs tax, which is a much stronger version of the estate tax. And then, you know, we should also be looking at personal income tax rates on the wealthy.
Do you think it makes sense, if you are looking for additional revenue, to tax from, I guess, related sources to childcare? So, for instance, you can make the argument that corporations employ people, and thus they have a vested interest in childcare, so it would make sense to tax them. Or are you agnostic about the source as long as it is from the pockets of wealthier corporations or individuals?
I'm agnostic because this, again, we're talking about something that's diverse, as, you know, in terms of like its use as education in the education system. So it's not simply that childcare is necessary for parents to go to work. Childcare is early childhood education that makes children more equipped for a really high quality education, preps them better for life, and helps a more functioning society. When you think of it like that, we all benefit from this. You know, it's not a handful of corporations. Everyone benefits from a strong, robust, high-quality early childhood education.
Well, returning to that comparison you made with public schools are funded in part by state dollars, but also by property tax dollars. Should childcare have additional funding sources besides the state? Should there be some sort of local contribution, some sort of employer contribution, or should the parents have to kick in some percentage of their income?
I think it's good to look at options across the board, you know, in a mixture of federal, state, and localities. This is a situation where the federal government, where we were really hoping for better things with Build Back Better, and the federal government fell through. But again, New York State has the resources to bring universal childcare, and we should do it. In terms of the parent contribution, we should make it free at the point of service, just like any other universal good. You know, once you start, start carving things up and telling parents to pay a certain amount, one, that complicates the process, causes unnecessary bureaucracy at the administrative level. But then ultimately, we see that parents end up getting shut out of the process. You know, there are one thing that came up on our tour was a center that had the same family applying for childcare. And because of bureaucratic hurdles, and they're not sure what happened, but the four-year-old was approved for a childcare and the three-year-old wasn't, even though it was the same exact family.
And after a quick break, we'll have more on the state of child care in New York with our guest, Senate Children and Families Committee Chair Jabari Brisport, a Brooklyn Democrat who supports proposals to create universal access for child care with a minimum $5 billion annual investment from the state. When we get back, we'll have the senator respond to some of the child care proposals in the governor's budget, including a pilot program and streamlining the application process for care.
Support for the Capitol Press Room provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. Visit unionstrongny.org for more information.
For listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our conversation about the child care industry in New York. And our guest is Senate Children and Families Committee Chair Jabari Brisport, a Brooklyn Democrat. So your proposal for universal child care would be a big game changer from what the governor is supported in the past and what she's proposing in her executive budget. So I want to talk a little bit about her proposal, though, because it is what we're going to probably be debating over the next 2 months, while at the same time you're pushing for a much broader proposal. And one of the things that she talked about, which again kind of exemplifies this idea of a much more limited scope, is the idea of a pilot program which would create an employer-supported child care system where the employers contribute a third of the cost of care for families and the state will match it. And this is ideas to reduce out-of-pockets for parents as well. I think this gets launched with about $4.8 million in the governor's proposal. What do you think about exploring like something like that?
I think it's very dangerous to tie a person's employment to whether or not their child is getting educated, in the same way that we really need to end the practice of tying people's health care to whether or not they're employed. We need to pass the New York Health Act. If we truly believe that child care is something that is a right, then we have to make sure it's guaranteed to all parents, regardless of what hours they're working or their current employment status.
One of the items that got mentioned during your hearing was this idea of how few parents who start the application process for child care assistance actually finish it. And to that end, the governor in her budget proposal has some measures designed to streamline the application process and standardize eligibility across the state, because counties can approach this a little differently within certain parameters. What do you think of those priorities?
I think that approaches what the issue is, which is that means testing prevents families who need childcare and education for their kid from accessing it. And I really want to drive home the point that it's not simply a matter of tweaking the existence of means testing, but ending means testing in order to get children into childcare.
If we are looking to get kids into spaces, how fast do you think we can turn around the industry so that the workforce is there to meet the demand and we have the housing to actually accommodate people so there's spaces for these classrooms and other spaces that we're envisioning for the childcare industry? Is this something that can be done, say, in 2023 if the $5 billion investment is made, or do we need to think about this on a longer time frame?
You know, it really comes down to whether or not the governor is willing to do the necessary investments into the sector that are required to stop the freefall, or if she wants to negotiate against childcare funding again and reduce the amount that we're investing. In terms of space, you know, there are many places where you don't even need to build a new center or a new large building. When you incorporate family-based and group family daycare into the sector, and people are opening up their homes, become childcare providers. That is a matter of you know, doing the necessary changes to their existing home to make that happen. And it can happen quite rapidly if we make the necessary investment. The constraints on time will be like how quickly we can get more providers in and training and into the sector. But in terms of infrastructure, that can be done fairly rapidly if you start incorporating people's homes who are willing to do that.
With regards to this idea of people offering care in their homes, have you heard anything while maybe you were doing your tours or hearings about concerns that providers have about burdensome regulations when it comes to the physical spaces they're offering? Are there steps that could be done to make it a little smoother for people who are interested in this to begin to offer, say, a residential space as childcare? Or are you happy with the steps that they need to go through and the different requirements that they need to make in order to have a space that's going to accommodate kids?
Oh, absolutely. You can definitely come through and find ways to make it easier for people, for family-based operators to provide care, you know, while also still maintaining high quality care for the children. You know, I'll never forget one story we heard from a provider out in Long Island on the tour who got dinged by an inspector because they were keeping their attendance on an app on their phone and just checking in the kids as they went along. And they had forgotten to also keep a record of attendance on paper, which was a local requirement. And that ding, you know, there all of a sudden, and, you know, it affects their perception of quality. And it was a difference between keeping attendance on an app versus, you know, on paper.
And is money the only thing that's keeping the industry from not really growing or from shrinking additionally? Is it just low wages that keep people out of this sector? Or are there other things that need to be done to attract both the workforce for childcare centers, as well as the people who might actually run one?
When we talk about stopping the bleeding, I mean, what we're hearing is that there are people who want to do it, but are choosing other jobs that pay a little bit more. We're also hearing the story of people not entering the profession because, you know, they have to do a lot of training to do it and then don't find that the wages that they'll get as a childcare provider satisfactory. And that just needs to be the focus right now. You know, you have people that are working minimum wage or sub-minimum wage leaving the field, and you have childcare providers closing. You have ever-expanding wait lists. You know, people at the hearing said they had never seen wait lists this long in their life, that they have capacity for more kids, but they don't have enough teachers. I have a daycare center that's on the risk of closure in my own district that's literally only closing because they don't have enough teachers to be in the correct ratio to provide a high quality of care. And we take that as the number one thing is making sure people can stay in this industry. Then the number one priority is to pay them what they're worth.
Well, speaking of the requirements, if you're going to pay people like teachers in our public schools, should they have master's degrees in the relevant industries if they're going to work with kids and be compensated like teachers?
You know, we can have a longer like conversation. We do need to dive into like what the sort of salary schedule could be like, similar with teachers, and you know what sort of tiers you could have if you have a master's versus a bachelor's. in order to offer, you know, high quality, and what roles, you know, certain certifications needed for in it. But for someone who's willing to get a master's in early childhood education and provide that level of care, we absolutely should pay them on an equal par with someone who has a master's working in the K-12 system.
But not necessarily require a master's in the child care settings.
No, I wouldn't say that.
And finally, we've talked about providers and them shutting their doors. What happens to parents who are shut out of the system, either because they can't afford it or there aren't enough providers in their community? What have you heard about the response from parents? What are the different ways that people cope with this issue?
A few different ways. They will go underground to maybe a provider who is not licensed and sort of do it that way. They may reach out to family, or they may bite the bullet and not go to work that day, or they might miss their appointments because they have no one to watch their child.
Well, we've been speaking with Senate Children and Families Committee Chair Jabari Brisport. He is a Brooklyn Democrat and champion of investments in universal child care access. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dave.
And for more Capital Press Room content, visit our website, capitalpressroom.org, or check out wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Support for Capital Press Room provided by the William G. Pomeroy Foundation. Communities across the Empire State have stories to tell. A roadside marker funded by the William G. Pomeroy Foundation can help your town or city educate the public, encourage pride of place, and promote local tourism. More about the Pomeroy Foundation's New York State Historic Marker Grant Program for 501c3 organizations, nonprofit academic institutions, and local state and federal government entities at wgpfoundation.org.